My name is John Erling, and today's date is September 12, 2023. Joining me is Dr. Bob Blackburn, the former executive director of the Oklahoma Historical Society, and of course is a well-respected historian throughout our state. Dr. Bob, we have recorded your oral history already, which captures your life from birth and your journey on becoming an historian. We thank you for joining us. You're busy these days, aren't you? What are you doing?
I am, John. Thank you for asking. I'm taking on consulting projects where I'm still writing books. I just had two books out this summer. So I've signed a contract to write a history of parks, open space, and landscaping in Oklahoma City since the very beginning. So it's an environmental history as well as political and recreational. So I'm enjoying that. But taking even more time is museum exhibit design. I've now worked on three different projects in Oklahoma, including the Oklahoma Military Academy Museum in your part of the woods in Claremore. Finished that last September, but now I'm working on a project in Fort Worth in the Stockyards, Texas Cowboy Hall of Fame. So they've got a bunch of Okies helping the Texans with a new museum.
Did you know you were going to be this busy when you retired?
No, I should have guessed, because I've always had a servant personality. That's the reason I think I was drawn to public history rather than academic history, is that I like helping people. I like doing things. And when people ask for help, it's really difficult for me to say no. I'm learning to say no to a lot of this, especially speeches, you know, whereas during my public service years, I was doing 80 to 90 speeches a year. Well, you as taxpayers were paying me to give those. Now I'm on my own consulting, so I'm not doing as many speeches. But I enjoy the research, and I enjoy the three-dimensional world of taking a historical idea, combining it with words, with images, with objects, with spatial relationships and scenic backdrops and interactive videos. And it's such a multi-layered process. It's like going from just being a piano player to being in a full orchestra. And I'm really enjoying that. Learning curve is still going up, but I enjoy the creative process a lot.
Well, everybody's fortunate that you still want to be working and be that busy. So we're here to tell the story of Sonic for our website and podcast. Now, you wrote the book, Sonic, The History of America's Drive-In. It was published in 2014. And I had never really thought about Sonic being America's Drive-In. We're just so consumed, we think this is Oklahoma. But the more I got into your book, I realized why you chose the title. This is an Oklahoma company that became America's Drive-In. Aren't we in, Sonic in most states right now?
Yes, almost every state. They've moved north. At one time, Sonic leadership thought we are a southern company because that's where drive-ins do the best. People are out before air conditioning, out in their cars, driving around, they're stopping. They thought that was the business model that worked well. But as Sonic has opened stores in places like Long Island, New York, it became a safety hazard because people were backing up onto the interstates trying to get to their Sonic. And what's happened, and we'll talk about this a little later on their advertising, is that it was so effective with national advertising, Sonic was being advertised in markets where there was no Sonic. And so it was building up this pent-up demand until finally when that Sonic opens, everyone wants a Sonic. And for years, my national meetings, people would know I either wrote the book or I was from Oklahoma. And they said, we can't wait for the Sonic to come to Seattle. We can't wait for it to come to Minneapolis, St. Paul. And so it's been very successful adapting the business plan to a bigger geographical market.
So today they have over 3,000 stores?
Yes, almost 3,600 right now. It's pretty much the same when Sonic was taken over by a national company about 4 or 5 years ago. It's about the same size that it was then. There was aggressive expansion up to that point. Now I think it's more internal change.
So you interviewed Troy Smith Sr., the founder, for this book. When did you interview him?
I started immediately. The way the book came about is that in 2003, I knew that Sonic had really started as a little drive-in in Shawnee, Oklahoma. And it wasn't called Sonic until 59, but I knew that the top hat had been created because it was a top hat in Woodward, where my wife is from, and I knew that story. And, of course, Cliff Hudson, who is chairman of the board, CEO for many years, legal counsel originally in the 80s, he and I were friends. So I knew about the 50th anniversary coming up in 03, so I could Cliff, you really need a book about Sonic. You know, people need to know this story. And we missed the opportunity. But then the 50th anniversary of the name Sonic in franchising was coming up. And so Cliff finally decided that Troy's getting older, and he wanted to honor Troy Smith, was his true motivation. Yes, he wanted a book to pull the network, and we'll talk about this in a little bit. There's this dynamic tension that's made Sonic successful, which is some centralized direction. I would start to say control, but it really wasn't control. Direction and motivation. But then the energy of franchisees around the country who are putting their heart and souls into their little business and developing internal leadership themselves. What he was looking for is a way to unify this decentralized network of businesses. And he thought the book might help, that everyone shared a common beginning, everyone shared a business plan, everyone shared the ups and downs of the economy. And I think he wanted something, but I think as importantly, he just loved Troy Smith so much and respected Troy. And Cliff never really changed the business plan. Of course, he expanded it with technology and other leadership decisions, kept going. But he wanted to honor Troy, so he finally asked me if I would write the book and interview Troy. And so I interviewed him off and on for 2 years.
How old was he? When
I would guess he was 86, 87, 88, somewhere in that range, late 80s. He had lost his eyesight. He had lost an eye as a child, but his eyesight in the other eye finally failed. And I would go in to interview him, and typically 2 hours at a time. And I found that a two-hour interview, everyone gets tired. Person asking the questions, you start rounding off the corners and not following up, and a person gets tired of concentrating. So I thought 2 hours, well, I probably did 25, 30 interviews over those 2 years, and I learned to look forward to those and would set aside an entire morning if he got to going. I could usually tell him when he was tired. Leslie, his daughter, was always with us. And I learned so much. I wish I had met Troy Smith early in my career, because a lot of the values that he brought to Sonic would help any of us, whether it was in radio broadcast or it was someone at the Oklahoma Historical Society. Those same values work anywhere in a system of free enterprise, a republic, democracy like America. And I really learned to love Troy Smith.
And he died in 2009. He was 87 when he died.
He was 87, so it must have been about 85, because he got to see the book, and he passed away 1 week later.
Is that right?
And I read every chapter to him as I was writing the book. So it took probably a year to write, maybe more. I don't remember now exactly. But as I would write a chapter, I'd go in and say, Troy, here, can I read it? So he'd sit there very patiently and kind of looking ahead, and occasionally he would correct something if the facts were wrong, but he never changed my opinion or my historical interpretation. But I read him, so he had heard the entire book, and his memory was incredible, and it was like he could recite it. And then finally we got the selection of photographs. I went to see him again. I said, here are the photographs I intend to use in the book, then gave it to the designer, Skip McKinstry, a great designer here in Oklahoma City, had done most of my books. And so we designed the book, and it was printed. And as I went in, I said, I handed the book to Troy, and he felt of it. He put the book in his hands, and he was feeling it, and it's got a nice laminated cover. And I said, Troy, that cover is mustard yellow and ketchup red. And he just smiled. He said, oh, great. And I said, there's a rotor skate on the front and on the back, photograph of you and Cliff, two generations of leadership. And then we went through that book page by page. He opened it up, and he started turning pages, and I was looking at the page, and I would tell him what the photograph was. And for 2 hours, we sat there, and he read that book, even though he couldn't see it. He read it through my eyes. And at the end, he was so proud of it. Leslie, his daughter, who's since deceased, but anyway, Leslie called me later, and she said, Bob, you wouldn't believe it, but the minute you left, Daddy, she always called him, Daddy got on the phone calling everyone he knew, saying, I just read this new book, and I want you to have a copy. And he was so proud of it. Literally 1 week later, he gets ill, goes into the hospital, never comes out. He was living to see this book.
Yeah.
I think Cliff Hudson knew that. I suspected it, and Leslie, and I've remained close to Leslie until I did eulogy at her funeral. Stayed very close to the family after that, because they said he was so happy, and that was a great way to end your life, knowing that your story would be preserved for all time.
And what a special moment it was for you.
Oh, absolutely. It's just, you know, I live to write and research and to hear stories, and to hear such a great story, and to get stories from Marvin Gyrus and Ralph Mason and Cliff Futson and Matt Kinslow and the whole generation of leaders. I enjoyed putting that together, and before I came in today, it's been so long since I wrote it, I was kind of brushing up on some of the dates. I know the stories, but the dates seem to get a little fuzzy. But I was thinking, this is a pretty good book, yeah. So I'm proud of it. When people ask me my favorite books, I typically will say, well, I love the story of Sonic, but I love the character of Jack Zink of Tulsa. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that book, but this one had everything in it that I wanted to do, and so it was a real joy to be involved in this.
It's beautiful, beautiful book.